Jonathan Mickles with the Strategic Multifamily Investing Podcast, and I kind of have a hot update with you. We've got another guest that we've interviewed before, and that is Kim Lisa Taylor. Hey, Kim, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, Jonathan. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely, absolutely. The last time we had been, we had a discussion a couple of years ago, there was something that was in my mind, and I was like, I need to get this. We need to go ahead and focus directly on that. And so specifically, this episode is for those people who are new to syndication, and they're trying to get started. One of the things or the challenges that I found is like you're trying to boil the ocean. You're trying to talk to everybody. You don't really need to talk to everybody when you're getting started. There's a specific group of people that you need to speak with, and we're going to talk about that specifically. But before that, how's it been going with you and your firm? I know you've been growing by leaps and bounds. Share with us.
Yeah, so you know, we, like everybody in the commercial real estate industry, had a little bit of a slowdown in 2023, but we're starting to see it pick up again in 2024. And all the indicators from, you know, some continuing legal education I've been doing, and you know, other watching the financial markets and things like that are suggesting that things are going to, you know, kind of heading in the right direction and the upward direction. So we'll hope that that continues into the indefinite future.
So the cliff that we thought that we were going to see with commercial real estate, specifically around apartments, hasn't quite happened.
Hasn't happened yet. You know, of course, so much rides on the election, and I, you know, who knows what happens after that? All, you know, all things are up in the air, and I don't want to, you know, get into a political discussion by any means, but you know, it certainly will affect what happens in the real estate industry. It always does.
Gotcha.
You know. You know, so we just have to, you know, kind of roll with the punches, right? And be ready for the opportunities that present themselves in each new situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, are you investing yourself, or what is the, I guess, the position of your firm? And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, so I have some personal vacation rentals. Actually, I have homes in three different places, and two of them are rented out when we're not there. And then we're getting the third one ready to rent out next year when we're not there, so that we can kind of just travel around from, you know, northern Idaho to Florida. And then we have another place in Yuma, Arizona. So, you know, we like it when other people are paying our mortgages. And we like it even better when we're making a little money on top of that. But
so they've been profitable for you as well?
No, they've been holding their own. You know, so I mean, you know, it all depends how you define it, right?
let's jump into that. That's very good, because you know, a lot of people would have second homes, third homes, so that they could, you know, kind of, you know, their families, you know, they winter here, they summer there. And
that's right.
You know, but again, when you're not there, those homes are vacant. So you're still having to pay the mortgages, et cetera, on those properties. Where if you had short-term rental, you at least get some help in paying those.
We do midterm rentals. So we rent for a month or more. And we've had really great success with that. In our Florida house, we're able to get it rented, you know, almost every, for the whole time we're not here. The Idaho house is the one we haven't tried to rent yet, but I think we're going to try. That one might be a little more challenging because we're renting it in the winter, you know, but we'll see how that one goes. And then the one in Yuma, we just go off season. So we only stay there for a month or two, and it all gets rented January through April. And
that's great. That's how to do it. You're living the dream. That's geographic freedom. It's another option for people. So
yeah,
you mentioned that
I've got a little ebook that I'm going to have coming out here shortly about that, about, you know, how to run a virtual business from anywhere, because I've been doing it now since 2008.
Wow. So before we don't have a specific site or landing page for that, but how do people get in contact with you now? We're going to talk about it at the end of this, but how do people get in contact with you now?
Best way is at our website at syndicationattorneys.com. And then what I would suggest that you do there is, I do have a couple of books. We're going to talk more about these as we go, but you can actually get one of these free books mailed to you And so if you go to the free book tab there and you give us your contact information, then we'll start notifying you when other books and other publications are coming out. And we've got several scheduled for this year. And also we do our own podcast and we do live recordings so that you're always able to ask questions of us or the guests. So we've got a lot going on. If you want to, you know, be part of it, just sign up for the book and we'll send you some info when things are happening.
Absolutely. And it's been a little while since I've been on the podcast or if I've been in one of your live sessions, but you all do answer questions. So anybody who is out there thinking, no, they really do get in the chat and they make sure that they answer those questions. Okay, let's get down to the meat of it. So as I was talking before about boiling the ocean, you know, a lot of times you're a brand new syndicator, you're out there, you're talking to a bunch of people, and you're like, I don't know if this person works or doesn't work. How do I keep them in my database or not in my database? How many people do I really need to talk to? So let's focus on that last question. How many people do I need to normally talk to? Because you are a syndication attorney, so you deal with the SEC documentation that needs to go on, right? This is for people who are, you know, having silent investors, right? Where there's a GP and an LP. How many, you know, how much are the deals generally that are that you're seeing on average or from the stats that you know of?
Well, according to the Securities and Exchange Commission, the median of all private offerings under the federal rules, most of them are under Regulation D Rule 506, the median raise is $2 million with 14 investors.
$2 million with 14 investors. So that means that each invest you've got that's a lot of money that people are bringing to the table.
Right.
And there you said that the syndication type is a 506B offering.
506B, 90% or so of the offerings that are filed with the SEC. So when we do a private securities offering under one of these rules, there's a form that we file with the SEC claiming that we're using this exemption. And it's called a Form D. And of all the Form Ds that are filed, approximately 90% of them are Reg D Rule 506B, which is the friends and family exemption. This is the one that allows you to raise money from accredited investors. You don't have to count your accredited investors, but you can also have up to 35 non-accredited but sophisticated investors in your deals, but you can't find them through any means of general advertising and solicitation. And the investors can self-certify. So they're going to read a definition. Do I qualify as accredited? No. Here's the definition for sophisticated. Am I that? Yes. And then they're going to explain in their own words why they believe they're sophisticated enough to be in the deal. So really, it's more than someone with just some savings and a job. They have to have some training, some real estate training, some heavy stock market investing. Maybe they're small business owners. Maybe they have a business or finance degree, or they've owned real estate in the past, or they own their own other investment real estate. So, you know, there's a lot of other ways that they could qualify as sophisticated, but it's just more than just someone who's saved up some money.
So in that scenario that you mentioned, the median raise is $2 million, and that's 14 people. That means you've got 14 people potentially bringing $142,000 a piece. So do you know what the split is between like the GP side is versus say the LP side? GP is for those who don't know, the people who are managing the deal, putting it together, and then the LP are those passive investors who are offering their money. Do you know what the split is on that?
Well, so typically when we're doing a deal, we write a lot of offerings that are 70-30 splits. So that 70% of the deal is so you're going to create a company that's going to buy and own the real estate, and it's going to become the borrower on the bank loan, right? And then you're going to pool money into this company. And so you're going to do that by creating a couple of classes of members. One class we call Class A. Those are all cash paying investors, including the people who are putting the deal together and going to do all the work. If they're going to contribute their own cash to the deal, they buy Class A interest right alongside the other investors. All cash is created equal and it's treated equal. So everybody gets the same return for their cash investment. But then we'll carve off a piece of that company, usually about 25 to 30%, that is going to be reserved for the management team. And so this is where you get your sweat equity. So the management team earns money in a couple different ways. One way is they earn fees that are always going to be for their active role in managing the company, always going to be taxed at ordinary income rates. And then they're going to split profits with their investors according to their class B interests. So we have class A cash paying investors, class B are the management team, and this is where they split profits. And then the management entity, it's always a separate entity, will also earn fees. So that's really how we structure it. So really kind of three parts in a syndicate: the manager LLC, all the members of the management team actively involved, class A members, cash paying investors, class B members are the management team.
Okay, so then that right there says, in terms of the split, as you mentioned, you do mostly 70-30 between those who are managing or owning that particular LLC versus those that are, say, passively investing. You're saying that generally the management team is about 4 or 5 people, where the, because again, that's the 30%.
Five people. We've got a lot of two-person partnerships that have come back to us again and again, longtime clients. The more people you get into your management team, the harder it is to manage. So we never ever recommend more than five. But I will say that I was interviewing a very well-known syndicator not too long ago. And when I asked him, I said, we tell people five. And he looked at me like, yeah, that's insane. He's like, no. Two.
Oh wow. Okay. So then everybody else is hired. So I know that some GP partnerships, they actually they hire out an asset manager, if you will, to help them along the way. So that's
So you can hire, I mean, you're always going to hire a property manager.
absolutely.
You're not the property manager. I mean, you can be, but that's a separate service that you might be able to provide if you already are in the business of providing that service. Or you may also create a property management company because you find out you can't find anybody who's any good, and you ended up doing it out of necessity because of where you're buying, and there's just not any available good help. You're the asset manager. What that the distinction is that property managers deal with, you know, the tenant issues, they rent the apartments, they collect the rent, they deal with maintenance issues, all of those things. Whereas the asset manager oversees the property manager, makes sure everything's getting done, you know, helps make major decisions the property manager has to make, but then and pays the property manager, but also the asset manager is really in charge of the investors. So they're the ones that find the deal and come up with a business plan for the property, make sure that that business plan is getting executed, that they're hiring the right contractors to do the improvements, and that the improvements are getting done. They're the ones that go out and get the loan from the bank. They provide loan guarantees whenever those are required, and that's where they you know, earn their keep, right?
Absolutely. You got to do something active, if you will, to help make that happen. So let's go back to the numbers again. So we're talking 14 people. So if you were advising, say, a new syndicator that's starting out, if you know that on average there are 14 people who are coming to the deal, how many people should they, you know, maybe have in their database who can help raise that? Because 142,000 on a first deal is kind of large,
It
but
is.
it is. Okay. Talk to me about what the norm is, Jim.
So we usually write offerings where the minimum investment amount of a single investor is 50,000. Now we will leave some latitude in there for the manager to have discretion to accept less from a limited number of people. You know, or maybe the members of the management team themselves don't have to invest that much. They could put in 10 or 5 or whatever they want to, or they could just not get reimbursed for their pre-closing expenses, leave that in the deal. So there's lots of opportunities to do that. But typically, you need about 3 times as many people in your database as you expect to have in your deal. And I would say that if let's break this down a little further. Let's say you have a $2 million raise and you have $50,000 investors. How many investors do you have right there? Multiply that times three.
So
That
if we
is the number.
doing that number, that's 2 million divided by 50,000, that's 40. So you need about 120 people in your deal who can do at least 50,000. I mean, not in your deal. You need at least 120 people in your database who all have soft commitments that they can provide at least $50,000.
Because about a third of them will come through, but some of those other investors will come, say, well, I've got 100 or I've got 150. So that's where you end up getting those, the $142,000 average. But on your first deals, you should just assume that everybody's going to try it out and they're going to all invest the least. So you want to have as many people pre-vetted as you possibly can so that you can talk to enough people to get that deal closed.
Right.
So
So
you
one
don't
of the
looking at deals that are so huge that you can't raise $5 or $6 million.
good, good. So that's like there's a very famous article out there that says 1,000 true followers. Once you find 1,000 true followers, that then you no longer have to work, they say. These people who know you, like you, trust you. That's the triangle. But in
Wow.
this case, it's almost 10% of that number. So you may want to, and I'll see if I take a link and put that into the chat. 1,000 true followers,
I
but
love that.
in
Not
your
heard
data,
that before. I like that a lot.
yeah, yep,
Yeah.
yep.
Well, let me just give you a couple of anecdotal things from a couple of clients. So I have one client. We've interviewed him on our podcast before. His name's Bill Brancucci. They started out 6 years ago buying $3 to $5 million properties. It's probably been 7 years now. $3 to $5 million properties. Now they buy $30 to $50 million properties. I've seen those guys raise $10 million in a week. And they have 300 accredited investors in their database. They started out doing 506B offerings that included non-accredited, and then they graduated up. Once they got all those people invested, then they graduated up. Now they do 506C offerings so they can advertise, but they have this pre-vetted database of accredited investors. I have another client, Vinny Chopra. I don't know if you
Oh
know
yeah.
Vinny.
Oh yeah.
Vinny. Told me he's got like 550 investors and he can raise, what did he say, like $10 million in a couple of days.
Yeah. Vinny is a heavyweight. Yes.
Vinny is a marketing guru. I mean, he knows the stuff. He's out there, he's everywhere. He knows how to do this stuff. Yeah.
So if you're brand new, 120 people that can donate 50,000. You don't have to boil the ocean. The big guys, the heavy hitters only are servicing about 550 people, whether they are accredited or sophisticated. So
That's
it
right.
doesn't take a lot in order to make this happen. You had something else, it seemed like.
No, I think that those are the ones who I wanted to cover is like, just kind of put it in perspective. How much could we raise? And so it's a factor of two things. One, how much can you raise? And then two, how quickly can you raise it? Because both of those things weigh into what kind of deals you can do. If it's going to take you 30 or 60 days to raise a couple million dollars, you got to run through a lot of people. Once you get to that, status where you've done enough deals that people know you, and the thing that Bill mentioned when we interviewed him was he said, these are the same people that invest with us again and again. So once you have that, your true followers, right? They just keep following you. They like what you've done. They want to keep investing with you. And that's your goal is investors for life, right? Not just for one time.
Exactly. So $2 million. Wow, that's a little bit of money because again, see 2 million, and if you're doing back in the day, you used to be able to do a mortgage of 75, 80%. Are you still seeing that, or you're seeing it like 65%?
65, 70 is a lot more common now.
Okay. So then if you're doing a 65% raise, I'm gonna have to go do my numbers on that. Say,
Good
so
at
get
these.
the number.
My husband, he's the
Yeah,
77.
somebody else can do that while I'm there. I've got it. I wanted to make this quick, but thank you so much. This has been some good information so far. I've got a couple other questions before we go there. When you're talking to this 120, so let's just say it's 120 people that I'm going to put into my database, what have you seen in the past that could go wrong? And how important is personality in connecting with people and making the right choices?
Things that can go wrong. First of all, you need to pre-vet your investors. It doesn't matter if it's even a 506C offering. You need to know who's investing with you, right? You're bringing somebody into your life that could be a part of your life for the next 5 to 7 years. And not all relationships and personalities jive. So we need to make sure that you have enough conversation and enough understanding of that person's situation to feel like they're a good fit for you and for your deal. So just because someone has money does not mean they're a good fit. Some of them will want to control the deal. Some of them will feel like you work for them if you let them invest too much in your deal and own more than 20% of your deal. They'll feel like they have a say in everything that you do. And you just got to make sure that if there's a problem that arises, you feel like this person's going to be a good business partner for you, not somebody who's going to try to, blow everything up into a litigation matter. And if they're that type of personality that just likes to fight and argue, maybe not the best person to be in your deal. And then needy people, right? There are the people who invest the least are going to worry the most because they've got the most to lose. So you need to be cautious about letting those people into your deals because it may not be suitable for them. If they're that concerned about their money, they probably should be investing in something else that they have a little bit more control over than worrying about, how you're going to handle it. What you really want are people that are going to be happy and satisfied to trust you and that you're going to keep in communications with them. This is key. You have to regularly communicate what's going on at the property, what is, happening, how are things going, how's the plan going that you set forth for this property, where are we at in that plan? And, maybe it's going to be a couple years before there's even cash flow if you have to do some renovations or things like that. So you've got to, make sure that they understand what's happening and that things are progressing. And, you don't just go away and then 2 years from now say, okay, here's your check. They want to hear what's been going on in the meantime. You don't want to over communicate though. You can also over communicate. You start talking to people every single week, they start getting very nervous. And then they want to hear from you every week. And when they don't, they think something's wrong. So you don't want to over communicate. You don't want to ever offer monthly distributions because then people will start depending on it to maintain their lifestyle. They'll look for your check to make their mortgage payment or their car payment. You don't want that at all. You want people that are content to let you execute the plan that they believed in you to do. And you're going to communicate with them and tell them how that's progressing. And the worst thing you can do is if there's a problem, don't ever stick your head in the sand or run away. Those are the absolute worst things to do. What you need to do then is step up communications. Maybe now there's a problem. We had a fire at the property. One of the buildings burned. Nobody was injured. You let people know immediately in case they hear about it on the news. Hey, we had a fire. We're on the way there. We're going to go check out what happened. As far as I know, nobody's been injured. Nobody's been killed. And we're going to go there and figure out what we have to do to help the tenants, and then what we have to do to get the property back on track. And
Wow.
working, so we've had people that have gone through these situations, and you just have to talk about what's happening. Keep people apprised of everything you're doing to try to mitigate the situation, even if the property were to go down in flames. We've seen that happen before. One case, wind damage at a property took out like three buildings. They were uninhabitable. And the insurance company said it was worth $200,000, and the contract bids came in at $2 million. And they couldn't come to terms on that. They had to sue the insurance company while that was happening. They couldn't pay the mortgage. The property got foreclosed. They asked me, what do I do? I said, start talking to your investors every week. Tell them what's going on. What are we doing? What's going on with litigation? What's going on with the insurance claim? What's going on with this? And the property was ultimately lost to foreclosure, but nobody got sued. Okay, so people understood that everything was done that could be done because they were told everything that was happening.
Okay, that's a lot. So let me see if I can summarize that. So communication for investor relations, you're saying communication should be every month. Distributions.
Quarterly, if things are going according to plan. Okay.
Quarterly, if things are going to plan, if we start getting into some lukewarm water every month, if there is a crisis, then every week.
Yeah, or as often as you need to. Hey, we're going to tell you we have a hearing scheduled for, 3 weeks from now. We'll let you know as soon as that happens. So it's tied to an event then. But you're just going to let people know we are keeping you informed. We're going to let you know what's happening. This is a big concern for us. They want to know you're on top of it. That's
Got
what And they want to be heard because some of them may have some advice for you that you wouldn't have considered because some of them are perhaps, very seasoned and smart business people. And maybe they have some insight or an idea that could help you solve the problem. Maybe some of them are willing to put in some more money, loan the company money if there's a financial need or something like that. And you can tap into them as a resource. You're, as the manager of a syndicate, you're going to have the final decision-making authority. But you can tap into your investor pool as a resource to, potentially help you solve problems.
Excellent. So, in terms of distributions, you're saying monthly is not the way to go. It's probably better to go on a quarterly basis. That's probably, the rule of thumb. With respect, and I just did the numbers here. If we're talking about a $2 million raise and your mortgage is 65%, that means that your mortgage is average $3 million. So, honestly, there's some people who are doing a lot bigger deals than that. Some smaller deals, some smaller apartment buildings are a lot more than that. Another thing that you pointed out with respect to, handling crisis, would you recommend even media training for that investor relations person? Because that generally is the person, investor relations, is that's doing the communications on the behalf of the organization.
If there's a real crisis, you can always hire a PR person. You just need to have honest, open, and transparent communications. You're not required to have somebody on your team that already has those skills.
Okay. So then with respect to even the temperament of the those that are investing, right? As a syndicator, you want to make sure that these people are aligned with your goals and your values, which is very interesting. You probably may want to do a goals value conversation with the GP to say, who is it that we need? And as you're talking to people, you may want to vet them and find out what their personality and goals are. Right. So that when you're looking at saying, okay, I'm looking at my 120, we've got this raise, the GP team consists of these values. Who else has these values that is in my database? Maybe that's another way of being able to look at how you put together your database. The
Absolutely.
last question I have, and I think these are in your two books that you mentioned before, is the converse to the GP team, vetting those that are going to potentially be in the deal, those other people who are LPs who are interested in investing in the deal, they need to be able to vet the GP. Give us a couple of key tips that you found. And again, they can go to your books and you want to talk about those. But give me one or two key things that an LP should look for in a GP.
So, in the books, in both these books, the last chapter is 10 things you should ask a real estate syndicator before you invest. So, the reason I put this chapter in both these books is because I want the investors to understand how syndication works, because then they're going to be better able to spot the people that aren't doing it correctly, right? So if they understand, oh, here's why they're asking me to review all these documents. Oh, here's what they mean when they're talking about 506B or 506C, or why they're asking me about my financial condition. Here's why they're asking me those questions. Once they understand all that stuff, then they're going to start to spot the people that are doing it wrong, and they're going to be able to shy away from those people. And that's super important. I've actually written an article with another attorney that's about the red flags, like how to spot red flags in a deal. And we'll be publishing that on our website at some point in the future. But I just think, you've got to know the syndicator. You've got to trust them. You've got to get to know their, you need to ask about their track record. How many of these have you done before? How did they turn out? And don't be surprised if they tell you one of them was just bad, right? Because they're not all perfect. And some of these deals do tank. It's not all the time, and it's a small percentage of the time, but sometimes they do. And so you need to learn yourself maybe how to analyze some deals so that you can look at their numbers and make sure you think that their numbers are realistic. And that's the best thing you could possibly do. Learn how to analyze their deal and make
Gotcha.
sure, because some people, there are people out there, they're either, they don't know, or they're deliberately trying to mislead, that are, just maybe just throwing some numbers out there just to try to make the deal work. Right. But you want to make sure that the deal actually does work and that you believe that their assumptions are realistic. And so one of the things the syndicator may provide for you is a property package. And you need to look hard at that property package and see what their assumptions are. They should be listed in there, you know, that we assume we're going to buy it at this cap rate and we're going to sell it at that cap rate X number of years later. We're assuming that we're going to be able to increase rent by this much per year and to get to this NOI at the end, which we think is going to mean the property is valued at this. You've got to look at those assumptions and make sure that you believe they're realistic. And once you do that, then you can understand. You also have to look at, okay, how long is it going to be before there's going to be a distribution? Is there going to be a period of time where they're renovating the property and there's not, and they're putting the cash flow back in and they're not sharing it with investors? And what happens to my investment during that time? Do I get to accrue a return, or do you know, does it just start later and I you know, kind of that freeze of my money for that period? Usually it accrues during that period. So that's what you're looking for, is some kind of a cumulative preferred return that says, hey, even if we didn't pay for the first 2 years, we're still going to make it up later on. That's very common. So those are the kinds of things I think you should be looking for. But happy to talk about that. We do have a program. We've been asked by several people if they would, you know, look at somebody else's documents and see if, you know, if we thought everything was okay. And we don't usually do the financial analysis, but we will look to make sure that it appears to be compliant with securities laws. And, you know, you should always do a Google search, you know, and look back at page 2 and 3 and 4, because if somebody has a bad reputation, if something has happened in the past, they're going to try to bury it with a bunch of good press. So look past page one.
Yeah, and you got to make sure that the name of the person is the right person when you're on page 3 or 4,
Right. You can
because
be.
some people, you know, have the same name, and it may not necessarily always be there. Well, I
Well,
know that you.
my middle name. There's a whole lot of Kim Taylors out there. So I, you know, when I started practicing law, I decided to brand myself as Kim Lisa. There's not very many Kim Lisas out there. So.
There you go. There you go. I know that you are in the process of, and I think I saw a link here. Let me see if I can share it with everyone.
Oh,
Learn
yeah.
how to syndicate. It's a one day or, oh my goodness. And you're with the man himself, Vinny Chopra. Talk to me about this.
The infamous. Yeah, so we're going to teach a one-day course. It's a 7-hour deal. We're going to be, I think it goes from 10 Eastern time to 7. Well, it says right there, 11 to 6 Eastern time. So we're trying to, you know, cover both coasts. Vinny is going to teach the practical aspects of syndication, deal analysis, you know, finding deals, talking to investors, you know, all of the things that he's so good at doing and teaching. And I'm going to teach the part you need to know about securities compliance and deal structures and, you know, how you can legally market your offerings. So I think you're going to get a lot out of that course. And we do have an early bird special right now. It's $100 off if you want to buy it soon. And we look forward to it. It's a virtual event, so you know it's just one day. It's on a Saturday, so clear your calendar and make the investment. It's just $300, $297. Yeah.
So if someone is unable to attend the session, will it be recorded and they'll be able to get access to a replay or something like that?
I'm not sure what we're going to do with all that stuff right now. I think that you know, we're planning to have live Q&A at the end of each session. And I think, you know, it's very, Vinny is, you know, very busy world traveler. Talk to him personally. I think, you know, you would really miss out if you didn't get that opportunity to get that time to ask him specific questions. You know, I know I'm going to be listening carefully because every time I talk to Vinny, I learn so much, you know.
Absolutely.
And then,
Absolutely.
and me too. I mean, you'll have access to me as well, and you know, without having to pay legal fees, you'll be able to ask questions of me. And then we're going to tell you about some of the mistakes that you know, we've seen and that we've made in our syndication careers.
Wow. That's going to be an awesome event. And as I said, this is hot off the presses. This wasn't something that we scheduled. We actually have shut down the podcasting studio for until about the summer of 2024. Because we have done so many so far, and they're already producing in the can. But I had to reach out to you, Kim, because this was very important. And I still think that there is some some opportunity out there right now, especially as people are investing and wanting to get out and do some things. Because the cliff that we thought was there isn't quite there yet. Again, that doesn't mean that there may not be a cliff later on. This helps people to spur on and make things happen. So
It's the key to surviving cliffs. Okay, is don't over leverage your property, right? If you keep your loan to value ratios at 65% or lower, then you're going to be able to ride out a 35% shift in price and still refinance your property if that loan comes due. If you're up at 75, 80% and there's a 35% shift in price, then you get caught at the end of your loan where you have to refinance. That's when most people get in trouble and they end up losing the properties. So don't over leverage right now. Raise more money from investors. Explain to the investors that, hey, we're in a little bit of an uncertain time. So if something happens and the prices drop, the interest rates don't go down as we've anticipated that they will. I mean, that's the prediction right now, is that some of the interest rates will continue to go down a little bit. If we don't see that for whatever reason, then we may need to ride it out there. We could have to raise more money, but we have plans in place for that. So get your contingency plans ready because your investors are going to be asking about it.
Interesting. So, and don't over leverage. That's the way to be able to survive the cliff. Are you seeing more 5 and /10 year money than the 3 to 5 year money that you saw
Oh yeah.
before in bridge
So the
debt?
people that lost big in the Great Recession in 2008 through 2010, the people that really lost big were the people that had over leveraged their properties. So there were a lot of first and seconds on properties at that point. The other people that really lost big were the ones that did personal guarantees. And then they had short loan maturity dates that came due while prices were depressed. So the longer you can push out that maturity date, the more likely you are to be able to ride out the real estate cycle. Real estate is very, very cyclical. We have professional journalists on staff, and we have had one of them write for us an article called 100 Years of Real Estate Investing versus the Stock Market. And what we see about real estate investing is it goes up, dips, up, dips, up, dips, up, dips, but it keeps going up, right? Think of prices 100 years ago and high prices now, right? So it keeps going up. So, but you got to ride out those dips. You got to ride out the dips. So just think of it like riding on the ocean. You got to ride the waves. And if you give yourself enough preparation and you don't overburden your boat, then you're probably going to be able to ride out the storm.
Well, listen, Kim, as always, it's a pleasure. I wanted it to be a quick bam, 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 but as you keep talking, you bring up some very valid and interesting points. And so thank you so much for the wealth of your experience, everybody. I'll try to put links to all of those things that we talked about in the chat. Please make sure you go to, how do people get in contact with you?
So the best thing they can do is go to syndicationattorneys.com. I'll put it here in the chat. And you can schedule an appointment there, or you can sign up for a free book. Either one of those are going to get you access to their newsletter and our announcements. And we'll be keeping you up to date on this and also some other updates in the law that are seemingly happening around now.
Excellent. And so the final thing is, we always like to ask people to give us the boot. What is that one piece of advice that you think that people who are listening to this podcast should be taking action on right now?
Every week, talk to new prospective investors. Every week, okay? Every week, look for deals. Every week, talk to new prospective investors. If you keep doing both those things hand in hand, you will have enough, you'll find deals and you'll have enough people to fund the deals, and they'll all come together at the right time. If you don't do those things, if you just look on properties, you're not going to have enough investors when you need them. If you just look for investors, you're not going to ever find properties. You got to have it all. So, if you don't have all the strengths to go look at the properties and talk to the investors, find somebody that does, put together a partnership. Don't get married. You're just getting together for the first deal, right? Okay. But like you said, if
It's
you want
just
to
the
make
first deal.
a longer-term commitment, then you can do that after the first deal, but you want to just try it out and try out your partners, because some of them will work well and some of them, are not going to work out as well. So you just want to make sure that you've got all the right personalities and the right skill sets, right? Because you have to have complementary skill sets. and make sure that you have the right people on your team to get all those jobs done.
Absolutely. And if you are a syndicator just looking for LPs, you want to make sure that they just can give you a soft commit. Will they commit or will they not commit? And you got to make sure that you're.
I don't know is how much might they be interested in investing with you. So you don't
Okay.
have anybody for a commitment. Again, this is first date stuff, right? We're not asking people for an engagement,
Right.
right? So,
No, right. We're not asking for money because we don't have a deal. So
well,
that's.
the capital raising process really is a dating relationship. Think of it like that. You meet somebody for the first time, you're gathering contact information, have a little, witty banter and decide whether or not you like each other. You might have some rapport, schedule a follow-up, whether it's on the phone or at a coffee shop or, a happy hour, schedule a follow-up. There you're going to talk a little more, find out if you've got some commonalities, some common interests, if you're both interested in investing in real estate. And then you can start talking to them about, hey, well, before I could offer you deals, that there's some information I would need to know about you. Maybe this isn't the right time, but let's schedule another follow-up where we can talk about that in a more informal setting or, over the phone or something like that. And because you've got to find out if they're accredited, if they're not accredited, how are they sophisticated? Is a 5 to 7 year deal going to work in their time horizon? What kind of returns are they getting now on their money? And are you going to be able to do any better than that? And once you hear their number, you're going to know. If their number is unrealistic, they're not a good investor for you, right? If their number is, hey, 7, 8% is what I seem to be getting, it's like, hey, well, I think we might be able to do a little better than that. We usually offer 9% preferred returns or 8% preferred returns. That's been the number for a very long time,
For a very
decades.
long time. Yeah.
Percent plus a share of the profits. So people get stuck on the preferred returns and they only sell the preferred return. That is not what people are in the deal for. They're in for the preferred return plus a share of the profits that together, lumped all together and divided over the years that you've had the property, come out to an annualized return in the mid-teens. Okay, that's what you're looking for right now for investors. So that means you got to have a deal that's going to yield somewhere around a 20% annualized return in order to pay yourself. Okay, so if you're paying them, the eight, you've got to have something left for you. So think about that. They or I'm sorry, they get the 15. You've got to have something left, and you ideally don't want to have to wait until you sell the property before you get paid. You want to be able to get paid from cash flow all throughout the deal. And then if there's any catch-ups to be made in their preferred returns or in your returns, then you would make that at the time of sale.
That's a class.
Yeah.
And that's a class right there.
Yeah.
And so there is a class that we have to definitely go in
There's a
and
chapter in my book. Okay, so here's what's going to happen. If you go to Syndication Attorneys and you click the free book tab, then we're going to ask you a question. Have you raised money before? If you say no, you're going to get this book, which is short, easy to read, step by step, how to syndicate. Okay, how to legally raise private money. If you say yes, I have raised capital before, you're going to get this. It's longer. More like an encyclopedia, right? This one, you're going to use a table of contents. You want to read about a fund of funds, you're going to go to that chapter and you're going to read fund of funds. You want to read about a blind pool fund, you're going to read that. So they're both good. If you want them now, you can go buy them on Amazon. But we prefer you get them through us so that we can kind of keep you apprised of what's going on with our firm and with all the things you need to know as you build your syndication business.
So just for the cost of your name, email address, maybe a phone number, you can get the books for free,
Oh, yeah.
99.
Your physical address so we can mail it to you because we are actually going to physically mail you a book.
Gotcha. So you need your physical address, but again, for the cost of that, it's free 99. You don't have to necessarily go to Amazon and buy it.
House, I promise we're never going to come to your house, but we might email you.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Kim, for everything, and all the best to your firm and syndicationattorneys.com. Syndicationattorneys.com. Go reach out to Kim, and as you can see, she's a wealth of information, and she's so generous with her time and with the information that she shares. So, if there's ever anything that we can do to assist you in the future, please let us know.
Thanks, Jonathan. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.